New calls for an independent investigation into City Hall as a top agency head is placed on leave. Jacksonville passes 100 homicides for the year so far. And will the city sign off on a referendum to improve schools? Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. You can join us because, my goodness, it's been a busy week in the news. Give us a call right now. It's 549-2937. Then later, how Jacksonville is celebrating National Honeybee Day with a big festival. That's coming up. But first this hour, it is Friday and so much to get into as we welcome our roundtable here today. Chris Hong of the Florida Times Union. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Blogger and regular contributor Fred Matthews is here. Hey, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. And freelance journalist Claire Goforth.
Good morning.
Great to have all three of you here because there's so much to talk about this week. Much busier week than usual. And let's face it, we've never had a boring week. So this week is especially packed. Everything from the fight over school funding in Duval. Grim news about the city's rising homicide count for the year, too. We'll get to those stories in a moment. But our top story right now, the Duval County Democratic Party is calling for an independent investigation into Mayor Lenny Curry's office. They want to know if the mayor's staff put unlawful pressure to give favored treatment to groups that were applying for crime prevention grants. This comes as the Times Union reports that the head of the Kids Hope Alliance, Joe Peppers, was reportedly told by City Hall to give favored groups preferential treatment to get this money. Last night, the city announced Peppers has been placed on administrative leave, and they say he's being investigated by the city's inspector general's office. There is so much to discuss with this story, and we're going to begin the hour with a closer look. Chris Hong broke the story. He's going to break it down for us, and we'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Chris Hong, let's begin with the memo. Joe Peppers memorialized a meeting with top staffers at City Hall, Sam Musa and Brian Hughes, over the way he was planning to oversee a process to hand out grant money to nonprofits that are trying to help with the city's high crime rate. Tell us about the memo.
Yeah, so the memo, it describes Pepper's recollection of a meeting that happened 2 days before when he wrote it. He wrote it on Saturday, and the meeting happened on Thursday. And Pepper said in the meeting that he had a conversation with Brian Hughes, who was at the time the chief of staff, and Sam Musa, who was at the time the CAO, the chief administrative officer. And they essentially told him that we're going to have you personally involved scoring these grant applications, and that there are going to be certain groups that you're going to give preferential treatment for to make sure that they get the money. Peppers writes in great detail in this memo. He attributes, direct quotes to both Brian and Sam. And he said he left the meeting feeling incredibly unsettled and concerned. He didn't challenge them. He didn't disagree with them. He didn't say he would do anything, but he left the meeting feeling concerned.
And the concern was due to the fact that he perceived that the city was pressuring him to bypass the normal procurement process for grants. Can you explain that a little more?
Yeah, so when you apply, there are multiple ways to apply for grants and to award grant money. In this case, they were going to go with a competitive request for proposal process, which means you answer some questions, you fill an application giving some information about your group, and then several people at City Hall, be it somebody at the KHA or the administration, they give points. Like, each category has like a set amount of points, usually like 25 or 30. And then whoever gets the highest points, to say they have room for 35 groups to get money, the 35 highest scores get the money. And that's how it's supposed to work, and it's supposed to be objective and supposed to be free from political influence. Pepper says in the memo, and this wasn't an interpretation, he says flat out that Sam and Brian Hughes and Sam Musa told him that they're going to tell him later there are going to be certain groups that are going to get preferential treatment in the process.
And they allegedly said to him behind closed doors, this is we're talking now as family.
Yeah. So there was a part where Peppers attributes a direct quote to Sam Musa, and, Sam is saying this is political, this is family. And to be fair, Sam says he never said that. Brian says that the parts of that meeting that are legally questionable or troubling never happened. They denied doing anything wrong. They denied ever telling Peppers to give anyone preferential treatment.
We'll go to your calls on this in a moment at 549-2937. The other shoe dropped last night. After your story was published, Chris, the city announced that Joe Peppers, the CEO of the Kids Hope Alliance, who's accusing senior members of Lenny Curry's office of unethical conduct, he's been placed on administrative leave and he's the subject of an investigation. What do we know about this?
Yeah, so we don't know very much because the city's policy on inspector general reports is that it's supposed to remain confidential until the report's released. And I think certain people who are the subject of investigations are brought in a little bit earlier to respond. But as far as the public knows, we're not supposed to know anything. And so Peppers received a letter from Brian Hughes notifying them that he was being placed on administrative leave, that he's not to come to City Hall, he's not to report, or he's not to talk to any city employees, and that he might need to speak to an inspector general investigator in a meeting. And if that were to happen, he's to report to City Hall in 2 hours. He said that, you know, they were been notified that there was an inspector general's report or an investigation focused on him, some sort of alleged misconduct. And that's all we know. A city spokeswoman said that they couldn't provide any other information.
Yesterday, the Duval County Democratic Party also went on the record calling for an independent investigation into the mayor's administration. They are asking the Office of the Inspector General, State Attorney, and U.S. Attorney to look into what's happening to see if there was unlawful procurement fraud, abuse of executive power. And so as we talk about this, we'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Claire Goforth, certainly this administration has had its share of controversies and has faced criticism both in its first term and now in its second term for what some perceive as bullying, intimidation, heavy-handed conduct. This, though, is the first time someone in an official capacity has gone on the record making these kinds of allegations. What to make of this?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting that mere months after Joe Peppers got a job that many people at the time complained he was not qualified for, and indeed he was the least qualified by some metrics among that pool of candidates, he felt compelled to write a memo expressing his discomfort with the tactics of Sam Moussa and Brian Hughes of the Curry administration. Now, I understand that they do disagree with his recollection of that meeting, but if he was going through some elaborate plan to smear them, why would he write this secretive memo and send it and preserve it in the public record where it didn't see the light of day for almost a year? It doesn't give a lot of credence to what they're saying. And also, I'm wondering about these grants. Who got the grants? What did they do with the money? And who were the individual entities that Moussa and Curry thought should get preferential treatment? And I'm also wondering about the timing of the suspension. If this investigation was going on prior to Chris's excellent story, good job. Why did they wait until the day after to suspend him?
Lots of questions. And let's be clear, we still don't know everything. So we'll keep an open mind as we continue to get more facts. Fred Matthews, what about the point Claire just made? Joe Peppers, when he was appointed by the mayor's office to head up the city's Kids Hope Alliance, there was controversy around that. He came from a management position at the Amazon warehouse, former military guy. He was criticized, and the mayor's office was criticized that he was being elevated, and others who presumably had more experience in child welfare and this kind of work were passed over. Critics said that Peppers was being given the job along with some other appointees around town because City Hall wanted a loyalist or a crony, someone that they could control. That was the criticism. Yet what we're seeing now is that apparently Peppers did not feel comfortable with some of the directives he was being given and went so far as to memorialize those concerns.
Well, apparently Mr. Peppers did not realize from whom his bread was being buttered. The Kids Hope Alliance is a creation of which administration? This one.
It's the former Jacksonville Children's Commission, yeah, but, and Jacksonville Journey.
Right, but it got all reimagined under this administration. And everybody who was on that board got reimagined. And we got the same thing, JEA, we got the same difference in the CEO here that we got across town, imagine in the image of the creator. Now, I don't know Mr. Peppers, but one thing that everybody that works in city government knows is that you don't talk about your bosses. And he did it. By memo, good or bad or indifferent, he did it. If they came to him in private and said, hey, we got this, and all you have to do is review any of the news clips between the sheriff's office, the state attorney's office, and the mayor's office, and whoever you see standing in line next to the mayor's office when we're talking about the violence in the communities and having these rallies and training and those you can look at those and you'll get, and when the list finally comes out about the grant or who got the grant, you can look back at those news clips and you'll see the same names and pictures that showed up there. You know, it's unfortunate about what happened here to Mr. Peppers, but that is the way it is played at City Hall under this administration, and not so much this administration, but others. They came with strong suggestions for him to do A, B, and C, and either he didn't understand the politics of it, or he just flat didn't want to do it, or he thought he had some great independence, but that he simply does not have. He's not an independent authority. He's creation of the mayor's office and city council, period. It's like a nonprofit within the government. And, you know.
Well, that said, officials that are handing out money, according to the city's protocols and guidelines, have to follow a process.
Yeah, that would violate the procurement code to just say, hey, we like this entity, so they get the money. What Peppers has written essentially is a CYA memo. And why did he write that? I mean, what was he concerned about later? An ethics investigation? Something more serious than that? There was a purpose behind him writing that memo that wasn't just, I want to make sure I recall what happened.
Chris.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think the first sentence of the memo was, I'm stating for the public record that I do not feel comfortable with the process that I'm being pressured to put on from the mayor's office.
And to be clear, too, this had to do with money that the city was apportioning for crime prevention programs. I'll refer back to the statement from the local Democratic Party, which, by the way, did not oppose this mayor in his reelection. They did not field a candidate. But they write, this incident occurred in the months building up to the mayor's reelect. It leads to troubling concerns that taxpayer-funded micro-grants could have been utilized by the administration for political payoffs to quiet criticism of the mayor during the upcoming election cycle. Fred, that's hearkening back to what you just said.
Well, I mean, that's what happens. I mean, I know it could be shocking to some people to believe that the process, and it doesn't mean, and it did not mean that the candidates who put forth applications to receive the grants would not get a fair shake and a fair look at. That's not going to be that. You know, they're going to get a fair shake and fair look at by the folks on the commission. But what it does is that A, B, and C are going to be looked at a little better than C, D, and E, than D, E, and F.
I think that's the definition of unfairness.
Unfairness, it may be. But this is the politics that is being played and has been played. This is not like applying for contracts for construction where we have a laid out process. You've got layers to go through there in that process.
But, you know, I think I think the bigger issue we're talking about is the deepening dismay and frustration with a perception of government corruption.
Sure.
In this community. And as Fred is saying, this isn't new, but the perception that it's growing more flagrant, I think, has taken hold and is concerning to many voters.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of disagreement about what happened in that meeting room on September 6th, but I think nobody I've talked to disagrees with what Joe Peppers alleged happened there was not legal. I'll give you the quote that Brian Hughes gave me in an interview we had. I can tell you unequivocally that nothing in that meeting or any other meeting with him or anyone else in city government would involve undue influence or preferential treatment in procurement and contracting. The laws are clear. We follow the laws. So I think everyone agrees that what Joe Pepper said happened in that meeting room that was far above any sort of strong-handed politics or unfairness. I mean, that was not legal. So,
but who's going to prove it?
That's a great question.
The persons involved are the persons who are going to be investigated.
Right. Now, I'm not
Musa,
saying
who's retired, and Hughes, who runs the staff.
Yeah.
Well, that's why this is such a big story, because Brian Hughes has placed on leave the very individual who has accused him of corruption. That is where we are.
Yeah, and there's a potential argument for retaliation in that.
We don't know yet what Mr. Peppers might have done at the office to
investigated for, yeah, allegedly.
We don't know that. We'll have to learn that.
One last thing. The city's ethics code doesn't just say be ethical. It also says avoid the appearance of unethical behavior, which is a much stronger standard than merely being unethical. If there is an appearance of unethical behavior, then that could by itself violate the ethics code.
Let's go to your calls now. It's 549-2937. Bobby is on the west side. Hi, Bobby. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to me. I believe that Joe Pepper should be regarded as a hero for being a whistleblower and standing up to local political corruption.
That's all you got to say?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you for that. This gets back to something we talked about a minute ago, Chris. We don't know why this memo was leaked when it was leaked, but the reality of the situation is that Joe Pepper's narrative or side of the story got out into the public eye first. And so the perception of him in the eyes of the public, initially at least, after your story was published, is that he was standing up to government corruption. The city brushed back with their side saying that no corruption occurred and that, in fact, Peppers is the subject of his own investigation.
Yeah, and I would just urge everyone to just look at this open-minded and perhaps not rush too quickly to judgment just right yet. I mean, I think we all know, everyone who works in the news, that truth is stranger than fiction, and there's a lot of different turns and different things that happen and that are hopefully going to come to light in the next couple of weeks. So, you know, I think right now we have just a slither of what happened, and hopefully in the next couple of weeks we'll have a better picture of the truth, or, you know, more of what happened here, and maybe it'll make more sense. Maybe it'll be even more confusing when we learn more.
It's 549-2937. Tom is on the west side. Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Hi, good morning to y'all, too. While we're talking about corruption and outside investigations, I think the Sam Musa consulting offer to the school board, now that's really worthy of an outside investigation of some agency outside the city that can look into it without any bias and see if there was wrongdoing there. And that's what concerns me.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Yeah. And that's gotten lost in this news story. But yes, that also raised eyebrows when Sam Musa retired from his government role and then turned around and offered the school board his consulting services to help them get their sales tax referendum passed.
He's
also been given a no-bid consulting contract with the city right after his retirement.
So he doesn't have to do the school board deal. He's got a sweetheart deal back with his old employer. Look, this is what we elected, folks, unquestionably. And you're right, the Democratic Party here locally, feeble as they unfortunately are, did not put forth a candidate worthy of anybody. And unfortunately, this is where we are for the next 3 years. This is what you're going to get. There's not going to be any changes. The entire government is Republican. This is what we apparently want here in Jacksonville, and this is what we're going to get for the next 3 years. Who's going to inspect who? Half of the judges who had inspected are all Republican, and they're all going to the same social clubs and doing all the same things all the time. It's an unfortunate part about this. Now, going back to that, if I might, Melissa, going back to that, to the Peppers issue, the interesting thing now, the next story, we can pull this right away. We can see who got the grants right away. We can pull that right away and see who got the grants. And then we essentially ask the persons in each one of the grantees whether they felt that they were in some kind of privileged position with the administration to get those grants.
Yeah. Sure.
To do the good that they were going to do within the communities. And I'm sure each one of them said, no, I did this, I'm doing great with it. And that's the problem here. And unfortunately, You know, Mr. Peppers is going to be lost in the shuffle. I guess he'll probably be out of job within the next 30 days or so. For once the other shoe drops about exactly why this memo was leaked.
And is there more? I mean, what we really need to know is who were those favored parties. If Peppers would talk, that would answer those questions. Although it doesn't seem.
He did issue a statement. Let's get that out into the record that he is retaining counsel and that he was grateful for the work that he got to do for children. Keep in mind, yeah, let's bring it back to the agency itself. He was heading up the Kids Hope Alliance, the primary child welfare agency in this city. So the money was going to be handed out from that agency to nonprofits, Chris, that are trying to help youth, help particularly kids in high crime and underserved neighborhoods.
Yeah, and I don't think this level of controversy has ever occurred at, you know, the predecessing agency to this. You know, before this, there was the Jack's Journey and the Jacksonville Children's Commission. Curry had, you know, he basically said that he wanted more results and that he was looking to reform and challenge the status quo. I believe my colleague Tessa Duvall is no longer working here, but she wrote a story saying that there was an internal audit of the Jacksonville Children's Commission saying that basically everything was operating well. You know, they handled the money well. They were getting results. But, you know, Curry decided to reform and create the KHA. You know, as the mayor, he gets to appoint the board members, and those board members get to select the CEO. And, you know, here we are about a year and a half later, and I think we're dealing with an unprecedented controversy and over there. And it's just, you know, too bad that this is interfering with the mission of that they're trying to do, because this is an incredibly tough time for people in a lot of parts of the city. I mean, we've hit the 100 homicide mark, which we're going to talk about later in the show.
Right.
So I just think that shouldn't get lost either.
And let's go to a few more calls. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable with Chris Hong, Fred Matthews, Claire Goforth, and me. Lots of news this week. 549-2937. James is in Mandarin. Hi, James. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa, and to your guest there. I will introduce myself as being the battleground state voter that everybody likes to talk about so much. So I'll kind of give you an idea of my age. I'm a native Floridian, and I've had a daughter go through the public schools here in this area, and my sons go through charter schools in this area. Okay. And, so that kind of gives you, and I voted for George Bush and Mr. Clinton twice. So that guy kind of gives you a little criteria where I'm going, but
right down the middle, in other words.
Oh yeah.
You're a unicorn. I didn't know people like you existed anymore, James.
I'm your good attitude with a lot of skepticism kind of guy, you know?
Yeah, I hear you.
But, I'm really sorry to hear that there's at least the optics of corruption in our school board system in Jacksonville and Duval County. That really does hurt. And it really does give, those that are in favor of charter schools and, you know, kind of equal distribution of funds for, parents to make their decision on where they want their children educated. It's giving them more ammunition is where I'm going with this. I used to not, when I go to the polls to vote, you know how you have all those judges that need to be retained that come up and you're like, wait a minute, I didn't do my homework on this guy here.
James, let me just make sure I understand what you're saying. Because in a moment, we'll talk about the school board and city council fight over funding for schools.
Okay.
You're saying that you're concerned that allegations of corruption at City Hall are poisoning the well when it comes to the school funding issue?
Yes, I am. And I'm also concerned with some of the elected officials maybe should not have been elected. Somebody else given the opportunity. I'm really concerned about all this. And look, I do have skin in the game because I am a homeowner. I pay my taxes to the public school system. So I have a lot of skin in the game still, even though my kids are grown up.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is that I'm going to have to go right down the middle on this issue. And at this point in time, I don't know which way to go, left or right. That's all I'm saying. So like I said, it's really, there are a lot. I'm former military, and I know that there are a lot of people that think like me, maybe not on every issue, but there's still a lot of them, us around here in Duval County.
Yeah. So, sure.
Anyways, well, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, James. Okay. So it's interesting to hear callers like James. They're really just kind of trying to make sense of what's happening in this city right now and trying to get an informed take on it.
Yeah, it sounds as though he has a bad taste in his mouth about politics in general.
Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be a unique take.
How could anyone be left with a sour taste in their mouth? Crazy. Yeah.
It's 549-2937. Rick in St. Augustine. Hi, Rick. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Miss Melissa. I was calling. I heard a report yesterday about a local school teacher, I think, was either put out of his class because he wrote something on a chalkboard about a flag. If y'all haven't talked about that yet.
Right. She was disciplined over forcing kids to stand during the pledge, I think it had to do with. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Another story that in any other week might have gotten a little more attention, but this week it's not at the top of our list because we want to move on and talk about the whole reason for these micro grants to fight crime that are the subject of so much controversy right now, because Jacksonville reached a new milestone this week, and it's not one to be proud of. An early Monday robbery of an internet cafe ended in being 2019's 100th homicide for the city. There was also a shooting in Jack's Beach last night that left one person dead. And so Jacksonville, which has been Florida's murder capital on and off for the better part of 20 years, is on pace once again to lead the state in this horrific statistic. Chris Hong, the mayor, and other groups working to try to bring down crime rates in Jacksonville, I think, are obviously the police, city officials, nonprofits, they're all working very hard on this. They're sincere about improving this, but we're not seeing improvement.
No, we're not. And I mean, I remember about this time last year after the triple shooting at Raines High School after the football game, writing a story because a lot of people were talking about how, you know, this was a tipping point. We need to have some sort of come to Jesus moment and do something. And that's not to say that things weren't getting done, but there was some sort of recognition that, like, a hard change needed to happen. And that was, I believe, the 82nd homicide of the year. We broke the 100 mark, you know, earlier this week. And so, I mean, last year was considered to be just the lowest of low. And we're past that point now, the same mm-hmm. point of the year.
It's so depressing and it's so heartbreaking to see this happening year in, year out. And particularly in the hotter months of the year, we know what's going, we know that homicides will spike, Claire. And the Cure Violence Initiative, which the city has started, is intended to get at this. We'll have to see if that has any success. I think people are hoping that it will. But the kind of comprehensive, dedicated funding source that advocates have long been calling for to invest in kids and crime prevention and family strengthening programs, that does not exist in this community.
Yeah, I mean, for so long, and I know that there are a lot of really good people working very hard on this issue who care very deeply about this community and want to do something about violence here. But for so long, we've been operating on this idea that we can arrest our way out of this problem. And there are studies, and we can look at our own city and say that that is not working. Yes, we need to enforce our laws. Yes, criminals should be punished. But we need to come up with solutions that actually provide economic opportunity for people, that genuinely support these families, so that kids don't get started on this path for lack of opportunity when they're so young that by the time that they're in the system, it might be too late. You know, I mean, let's really be compassionate about this instead of punitive, I think is what we're hopefully seeing people start to realize.
Fred.
Well, that's part of what the grants were about from the Kids Hope Alliance, is to dig down deep within the starting in preschool and elementary school to try to get those kids steered in the correct way before the fourth grade, where certainly for young Black males, things tend to change at about fourth grade. So the processes are there and have gotten started. The issue, of course, that we have with the homicides is that it's kind of hard to tell people the truth about what's happening with the homicides. Now, the Cure Violence thing is working on the gang issue and trying to stop beefs from spreading any larger than they are. But you take, for example, the young kid, the teenager who was aiming the gun at the school bus this week. Well, he was aiming the gun at somebody on the school bus because somebody on the school bus owed money to somebody that he was there to collect for. And the kid who aimed the gun eventually got arrested. But guess what? The money is still owed. So they got to get the kid that's on the bus that owed the money. Somebody's still going to come to him to get that money. And this kid who got arrested, he's going to have a beef because he got arrested trying to arrest. That's the rat race that we're into. But Cure Violence can work to sort of solve that because you can ID it. Mm-hmm. But when you get to homicides like what happened at the arcade, we don't have pre-crime. You know, you don't have it. If somebody, that arcade in particular, which is why they need to be shut down, was robbed, what, three times? $10,000, $8,000, $2,000. The first two times, they went to the safe and got the money out. This last time, they had a security guard there. And he was, you know, he got shot and killed. You can't predict those things. But for the things that we can control, you try to work with that, but we all have to realize that there are a number of homicides that happen that are not going to be able to be predicted or prevented, especially with guns on the street.
Sure. Yeah, now you make such a good point, Fred, about just how complicated this is. You know, like if someone's going to rob a store, you know, armed robbery, that's, I mean, that happens everywhere, and that's just, crime has existed since the beginning of time. I'm certainly not an expert on this, but from what I can gather, talking to different people who know a lot more about this issue than I do, it does seem that there is a scourge of violence happening, especially among young people, over things as petty as like someone owed me money or someone like talked behind my back. And, you know, the fact that these, you know, what seems to me is like a petty or a minor beef being settled with the taking of another life, that's such a hard, how do you stop that? How do you convince people to not do that anymore?
The whole idea behind Cure Violence is putting violence interrupters into communities to try to stop this escalation before it gets to that point.
Sure.
Okay, let's take a few more calls. Kay in Nocatee. Hi, Kay.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
Being a longtime South Floridian and relocating up here a few years ago, I think that Jacksonville is unique in the regard that the city is the county. So when I listen to your show routinely, and I was in South Florida and listened to you in this on my South Florida station, made me feel very, very homesick. But nonetheless, all our statistics, whether they be for crime or for schools, is not Jacksonville unique in the
consolidated
country
government? Yeah.
Let alone the state. So when they talk about the statistics for crime, I worked at the big inner city hospital. I can tell you that I don't think it's comparable, but the statistical base, whether it be for the schools and their funding or the crime, it's like comparing apples and hand grenades.
That's right, Kay. Yeah. We do have a unique consolidated form, city-county government. Thank you for that. And we are almost unique in the United States in that the way our government is structured. And that does probably throw a wrinkle or two into our crime statistics.
Yeah, but we can factor in per capita and make a comparison.
David in Flagler Beach. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Good, go ahead.
Okay, have a question for you. Barb and I, we've moved here from Colorado. This is about 3 years ago, and we now live in the south area of Flagler Beach. And I've got a question. In many of the jurisdictions around the country, and have you seen, you know, with the news that's gone on for the past few years, whistleblowers are generally targeted very, very quickly. And the media can take a hold of that news and basically, you know, bend it to whatever direction is necessary to try to, you know, prove a particular case. But shouldn't there be, as we've seen in Denver, there are committees or agencies that will essentially take the information that a whistleblower gives and then put the whistleblower's name out of the news. There's no reason to have these people targeted before the allegations are either proven or not proven.
Right. But I hear your point, David, but here's the thing. Joe Peppers really was not acting as a whistleblower. He, according to Chris's reporting, he memorialized the meeting, put it the memo into the public record, and there it stayed for over a year. It was leaked to the Times Union by someone else, by a third party. Peppers was not seeking to publicly blow the whistle. That's our understanding of it. But I appreciate your point about whistleblowers in general. When they do try to call attention to government corruption or corporate corruption, they're usually fired, discredited, smeared. That there's a long tradition of that, and there really isn't a mechanism in this city or most cities to protect them. So I appreciate you making that point. Thanks, David. That's David in Flagler Beach. Lee tweets the show, Joe Peppers is a West Point grad and a Bronze Star recipient. What have Curry and Hughes done? Who do you believe?
What about that? Isn't Brian Hughes a military veteran?
Yeah, Brian Hughes did serve in the... He's a veteran as well.
Yeah. Right. I mean, but it does come down to a war of words now and who is more credible in this situation.
Absolutely. Look, I think... I'm not even going to begin to say who... Or to try to make a judgment who's telling the truth here. I think I'd rather go by evidence and what we can see. But if there is sort of some sort of investigation, you got to think that, you know, so Peppers, it's going to be his word against Sam Moose's, Brian Hughes, you know, a city attorney that memos spoke about talking to.
And didn't you report the city attorney allegedly told Peppers, don't do anything, you don't want to get on the wrong side of the mayor's office?
Right. Yeah. I mean, according to this memo, that attorney, he attributed direct quotes to, like, you know, let's not make a big deal about this. Let's not don't bite the hand that feeds you. To be fair, that attorney did email me this week and said that version of events never happened.
Denied it.
She never said anything to that effect.
Oh, so was Joe Peppers writing some fan fiction about what happened in some kind of meeting just for his own entertainment to preserve for the public record? I mean, not to be speculative and glib, but come on, people. There's no reason why he would write that unless he believed it happened. So, I mean, that's really where it stands. And honestly, it's so distasteful. A time and again, we hear these stories of strong arming and potentially unethical behavior, and then everybody clams up and it all goes away because people won't talk. People in the city will talk to us off the record. They will make complaints about what they see is going wrong. High profile people in city government, and then they all go fall in line right behind the Curry administration. And I mean, that's just where it stands. Fred's right. We get what we elected and we get what we stand for. And that's what we stand for. So that's Jacksonville.
Yeah, that's where we are. I mean, it gets to a point where with this Peppers memo, if we can call it that, it just gets to a point where it really doesn't matter what he thinks, you know, and as a CEO of this organization within the city government, he really should not have even memorialized it. He shouldn't have wrote the memo because it was not going to go anywhere.
This is a guy who worked in the military. West Point, as the tweet said, he probably came from a long tradition of as you said, Claire, CYA.
But in the military, you have somewhere to take it. The IG is actually an IG.
Oh, he had places to take it. Yeah. He just didn't because
Jump in, group, because we do need to note another big story from the week. The city council and the Duval County Public Schools board met Wednesday over another controversial matter, whether to put a half-cent sales tax referendum before voters this year. Council members brought up multiple times how revenue would be shared with charter schools. Superintendent Diana Green says her plan takes into account that 90% of charters are newer than Jacksonville's traditional public schools and that this referendum would be need-based. Now, at the same time, last night, a circuit judge issued an order in Clay County over a similar dust-up. He says the Clay County Commission has to place a half-cent sales tax referendum on a ballot for Clay County voters. They have the discretion as to when they can do it, but they must do it. Will this be a precedent that will force the Jacksonville City Council to do the same? Will they be directed under the Florida Constitution to get this matter before the voters, if not this year, then next year?
I mean, it should be a guiding principle, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it should be. You're right. But what we talked about before. Court proceedings take time. We're in the middle of August, going into September. You want to try to at least get it on before Christmas. And at the present rate, we can't. Look, by the count that I see in, from that three-hour get-together this past week, the count that I see is five votes that are solid that would vote to put it on the ballot for November.
No, we're November. Close to 10, which is what you need.
You think 10? Well, yeah. I'm saying I see five solid.
Okay.
The other five are not solid. They're wishy-washy, and you know, former Mayor Hazzouri is not among that five, and he's already talking about 2020. The only way the school board is going to get this on the ballot from the input that they got this week was that they will need to up the ante in their resolution for the charter schools. We're talking about 180,000,
80 million.
I'm talking to the students. We're talking about about 120 something thousand, considering all the kids in all the places in the public schools, and we're talking less than 16,000 by the school board's demographics, about 15,900 students in charter schools, 33 charter schools, and 188. Public schools, considering the exceptional centers and all that they have to overcome. In order for the city council to approve this going on the ballot, the school board will have to up the ante, it looks like, to at least about 10% of that $2-something billion. They'll have to up the ante that goes directly to the charter schools with no questions asked as to how they will use it before the city council will approve this.
Can I speak to something on that?
Yeah.
That's why the Clay County decision is so important, because the general counsel for the city of Jacksonville says that the city council has the ultimate say. And so if that holds true, then yes, like the city council can decide. They can set the bare minimum standards for what that referendum would need to do and how that sales tax would be used before putting on the ballot. That's why. But according to the Clay County, the court case related to the Clay County School Board, the judge said that you don't have ultimate authority to say no or yes. That you can
add
input.
You can set the terms, but you have to let it go before
the voters.
You
can set terms for the timing. You could say when you want it on there, and there are certain parameters that you could set the terms, but you cannot. At some point, you do have to put it on the ballot. So, you know,
it's going on the ballot in 2020. It's not going to go on the ballot. That's exactly it. The city council is taking advantage of the fact that they're going to push this back to 2020.
And does all of this stress you out? Because we are close to a break, and this is why I ask. It's our look at the strange, bizarre, and ridiculous from the week. Here is a back-to-school edition of Only in Florida. If we're all a little stressed about the first week of school, one woman was, she decided to go to Disney World by herself to celebrate the first day of school. And her photos made headlines around the world. The mother of two told Good Morning America that she just needed some mom time, some me time. So she took pictures of herself at the theme park in Orlando by herself with a variety of characters and employees, just enjoying the day at Disney alone with no kids.
They'll be doing their chores next time.
She's encouraging all moms to take some time out for themselves as the kids go back to school. I think that she's absolutely right. Although I wouldn't go to Disney World to de-stress.
No, I would not.
Would you, Claire?
No.
All right, Chris Hong, thank you so much.
Thanks
Fred
so much
Matthews,
for having me.
Claire Goforth.
Thanks, Melissa.
I'm going to Disney World, she said. Up next, find out what all the buzz over our Honeybee Festival is about. That's happening this weekend. We'll be right back.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. A mini stroke, or TIA, happens when blood is briefly blocked from the brain. It often warns of a looming stroke and requires immediate medical attention.
Learn more at waynehogan.law. The Youth Crisis Center is dedicated to providing healing to those who are hurting from life's unfortunate events. Information about getting help or transforming a life through a donation is available at ycc.org.
I'm Ira Flatow. This week on Science Friday, we go to a bat cave to watch a Texas bat-nado.
So that vortex is going to move out to the mouth of the cave, and then they stream away in this river of bats in the sky.
And we'll talk about bird conservation in Texas, from ranching to wind farms. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon at 3 here on 89.9 WJCT.
It's back to school week for the Sunshine State. I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
This Friday, as students around Florida head back to class, school security is top of mind for parents, kids, and educators. We'll take a closer look. Plus, improving the mental health of students. What's being done?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Friday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
New Trump administration rules pose new threats to endangered species. A controversial congressman alienates his colleagues with remarks about rape and incest. Also, the famous poem on the Statue of Liberty gets a rewrite, and Woodstock turns 50. The Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. That's the Flight of the Bumblebee. Remember that song? It's appropriate because tomorrow is National Honeybee Day. And to celebrate, Jacksonville's own Bee Friends Farm is holding its second annual Honeybee Festival at the downtown fairgrounds. Guess what? It's free. You don't want to miss this. It is such a fun time. Here to tell us what all the buzz is about. Excuse me, I had to get that in there. We welcome Paul Sifton and Michael Leach of Bee Friends Farms. Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So good to see you. And this is such a great event. I encourage everyone to go out to the fairgrounds tomorrow for the second annual Honeybee Festival. You had thousands of people there last year. We'll talk all about that in a moment. But first, you have some other news to share, guys. Your wildflower honey that you make at Bee Friends Farm has a new addition, a new product associated with it. CBD. Can you share the news?
Yeah, it's something that we feel that with the honey and the greatness that the honey gives you, the CBD is just another good additive. And so we joined up with a company that we researched, the Bliss, and we've been receiving the isolate product from them, and then infusing it in with our honey. Michael will talk a little bit about the event tomorrow.
Yeah, so this is, of course, all the rage, CBD. Every product has it. How confident are you that this will be even more popular than your regular honey, which is already very popular?
Well, I think the combination of our honey that we have currently that is very good. It's going to give the customers that choose to take CBD an alternative to the oils, which may not be as tasty, and make a better edible product.
And how do you feel about the new regulations for hemp and CBD that are coming online in Florida, and they'll regulate the use of this product in foods and other products that are sold over the counter?
I'm in favor for it. I believe it's definitely going to be beneficial to the people that want to take it.
Yeah, and so you can get this product along with a lot of other stuff at the big festival. The fairgrounds is downtown. It's air conditioned, the big building where you're having this. And I had the opportunity to go last year, guys, and it was a huge smash your first year. This year, it sounds like you have even more planned. What all can people enjoy tomorrow at the festival?
Well, first of all, we've nearly doubled the guest speakers that we have, delivering individual specific topics. We have all the local bee clubs back, and they're going to be there in force to help talk one-on-one with people that have interest in our local bee community. And we've added nearly double the vendors that will be there, and a lot of them bringing a lot of nice bee-related products for sale. The Bee a Kid Zone is going to have the Jacksonville Zoo there and several other great people, and especially the 4-H Club out of Clay County, the Stingers, which their whole organization is about honeybees.
Mm-hmm.
they'll be there with the kids and helping in that area.
And this is on National Honeybee Day. Paul, you know, this festival is happening as the whole world is sort of waking up to the fact that bees are threatened by environmental degradation. It's important that we keep bee colonies healthy and continuing to make that honey, right?
Yeah, it's something that everybody needs to be educated on, because without the bees, we would lose 40% of everything that we eat. And there is a dwindling population of bees going on. And the homeowners that have their hives in their backyards are great. They help the pollinating in the neighborhoods and up to the large companies like Bee Friends Farms.
So come on out and celebrate the bees. This is tomorrow, Saturday, from 10 to 5 at the downtown Jacksonville Fairgrounds. Free and open to the public. You will have to pay a $5 fee per car. No? At the fairgrounds? You don't have to do that?
No, we're going to be taking donations.
Taking donations.
Yes. No, you don't have to pay to park if you don't wish to.
So there you go. An incredible free end of summer festival at the fairgrounds. You can pick up some amazing honey from Bee Friends Farm. And there will be so many other vendors and things for kids to do. You'll learn about bees and honey. It really is such a cool thing to do. So family friendly and free. Lots of parking. You can't beat this. So, guys, I thank you so much for stopping by in advance of National Honey Bee Day. It's the second annual Bee Friends Farm Honey Bee Festival at the fairgrounds. Paul Sifton, Michael Leach, thanks for all the sweet news, and I'll see you at the festival tomorrow. Thanks so much.
All right. Looking forward to it. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our Busy Bee Director. And if you have questions or comments about the show, we always want to hear them. Send that feedback to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Make sure to tune in today at noon for the Florida Roundup. It's our weekly live statewide show looking at the biggest issues across Florida from the week. And this Friday, we are focusing on school security as students across the state head back to class. Tune in at noon and call in at noon for that. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.